Hello and welcome to the Rogers Brief for February 11th, 2024. This is Super Bowl Sunday, and I'll be making a Super Bowl prediction. Predict the score between San Francisco and Kansas City at the end of my video here. So it might be a briefer brief today. I'm going to cover four stories. One, this is the was the week of the first court appearance for the five players from the 2018 junior hockey team, Canadian junior hockey team, gold medal winners, charged from some allegations from 2018 in London, Ontario. And they had their first court appearance this week. It was a very brief court appearance, but there was a lot going on. And I want to talk about some of what I think is taking place in the background and explain some of what I think that means for the case going forward. Second story I'm going to talk about is this sentencing of Cameron Ortiz, the former Director General of the RCMP's National Intelligence Coordination Center, very high up individual within the Canadian Intelligence Services, and he was sentenced this week to 14 years in jail following a jury trial that convicted him of sharing secrets with organized crime, people alleged to be involved in organized crime. Third story, this is out of the United States, and I'll talk about it in comparison to what might take place in Canada, but this is involved a school shooting in Michigan back in 2021. Four students killed by a fellow student. The mother of the student, 15-year-old student, the mother has now been convicted of involuntary manslaughter. Father's also charged, going to be taken to trial later this year on a separate trial. And talk about the, I guess, the legalities of charging a parent under those circumstances. Last one I want to talk about is a Nova Scotia case. A former lawyer, disbarred lawyer, Lyle Howe, had a big win this week at the Court of Appeal. Nova Scotia was awarded costs and is now free to pursue a malicious prosecution allegation against the Nova Scotia Barrister Society. So that was a win at the Court of Appeal. I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the ins and outs of that one as well. Now let's start in London. And this is the five junior hockey players from the 2018 gold medal winning team, Dylan Dubé, Cal Foote, Alex Formenton, Michael McLeod, and Carter Hart. Carter Hart, certainly a player that would be on the short list, potential player for the Canadian national team in the upcoming best-on-best tournaments, one coming on next year, four-team tournament, and then the Olympics to follow. Carter Hart would have certainly been one of the favorites to be the goalie or a goalie on that team. So back in 2018, the allegation, there was a woman involved that went back from a bar to the hotel with one of the players, and then the allegation is that the other four became involved and that there was inappropriate sexual conduct taking place. So they were not charged back in 2018 or 2019 following an eight-month investigation. Now, Chief of Police in London, Chief Tai Truong, who is the third police chief since 2019 in London, so two other police chiefs have at least been aware of this case and haven't laid any charges, is saying, so the Chief Truong is now saying that there is new evidence that is justifying these charges. Okay, what would that new evidence be? Presumably, at the time of the original investigation, the police would have had the statement from the alleged victim. Probably also would have had medical evidence if there was a sane investigation, sexual assault nurse examiner investigation done to see what they could determine from any medical evidence. One would presume that was done at the time, and somebody and several people at least seem to have made the decision that the statement from the alleged victim plus whatever medical evidence was available did not justify charges. Now they're saying there's new evidence. Not sure what that might be. We know that there is a video of the alleged victim from the morning after, or as she was leaving the hotel, where a player very stupidly, I would say, tried to get her on video, basically saying that she had consented to what had taken place. Apparently, she looks quite distraught in the video, and that's not a helpful thing to do. So, what happened this Monday? There was a 20-minute court appearance. None of the players were there. Their lawyers, the case was adjourned for 12 weeks because of to give everybody time to review disclosure. Okay, what is that? Disclosure is the entire file that the police, like any evidence that the police have gathered, the entire Crown file, any statements from witnesses, any photos, any physical evidence, anything that they've done, has to be disclosed to the defense. All right, normally you would want that done prior to your first court appearance. Certainly, no court is going to expect a defendant to enter a plea until they've received and had a chance to review the disclosure with a lawyer. All right, so what happens Monday? It's just an adjournment. Every story in all the national papers talk about the allegations against the players. The interview with the chief of police and another investigator at the London Police Service talking about the case, thinking that they've got a strong case. They don't talk about what the new evidence is. They don't even hint at what it might be. They just say they have evidence and they have confidence in the case. Okay, so that's all the news coverage talks about. They've got something and they think they have a strong case. Okay, how else might this have turned out? My question, if I was a lawyer for one of the accused, would be why wasn't all of the disclosure, since this allegation is back from 2018, presumably it's gone through lots of vetting before those charges were laid, because it's a high-profile situation. Why wouldn't the disclosure be available well prior to the players being charged and the first court appearance? Okay, well, here's one possible reason. If it was available, the story this week would not have been players charged, police feel they have strong evidence. It would have been players have first court appearance, plead not guilty. And so it's a very different outcome, I guess, from a public relations point of view, from there's always two venues when you have a public situation. You have the court itself, and you live by certain rules there, and you need to defend and pursue the case in accordance with the rules of the court. But then you have the court of public opinion as well. And of course, for somebody in these player situations where they have, they're going to hope to be found not guilty. They're going to be hoping to be able to play in the NHL again. They're going to be hoping to, have teams that will accept them. Well, even if they're found not guilty, if the public relations side of this doesn't go well, then that further NHL hockey career might be foreclosed to them. Look at Trevor Bauer, Cy Young winner, top pitcher in the league in Major League Baseball. Also had charges. They were dismissed. The woman seemed like, she was just out for money. She had texted friends, all these kinds of things. Yet, Trevor Bauer cannot find a team in the Major League Baseball National American League to sign him. He's been playing in Japan, doing great pitching over there. But despite his skills, no team wants to sign him. All right, so there's a number of questions I have. So, the police chief are saying they've got strong evidence. One of the players did come out and say, I hope people hold back on judgment on this. There's more to it, and they're defending themselves. They're going to defend themselves, vigorously. So, add it all up. It took a while. It went through several layers of police who didn't think that this justified charges. Now you've got somebody who's saying, yes, it does justify charges, and seems to be manipulating the public relations side of things to make the players look bad, to make it look like the police service is doing a good job of looking after, you know, somebody with face, you know, making a serious allegation of sexual assault. So, I don't know. I have my doubts. So the fact that the disclosure wasn't available, the players couldn't just go into your first court appearance and plead not guilty and have that be the story, that is quite suspicious under the circumstances. So we'll see where it goes. It's 12 weeks before they're back for their first court appearance. Presumably that means there's a substantial amount of disclosure, or it means there's five of them and they have five lawyers and it was hard to coordinate the time. Not quite sure. Okay, so we'll see how that goes as it follows along. Next story. We'll talk about Cameron Ortis. This was the, like I said, former director general of the RCMP's National Intelligence Coordination Center, was alleged to have provided information to targets of the intelligence service and to sort of tip them off to what was taking place in exchange for $20,000. It all seemed ridiculous to me that this was somebody would throw away a career like that for $20,000. That just didn't hold up to me. But this is part of the problem with this trial. And the judge himself, he sentenced Ortis to 14 years in jail. Crown had been looking for nearly 30 years. They had been looking for a very substantial sentence. The defense was looking at time served. He's been in jail for 3 years already. So the fact that he didn't get or seemingly seek bail told me, I guess, that the defense must have acknowledged or felt that the Crown had a decently strong case and an expectation that he'd be serving time if he lost in order for him not to have sought and or received bail and to get out pending the verdict. So now he's got this 14-year sentence. The judge in the sentencing decision said he expected that the decision on the trial would be appealed. It's a jury verdict, so that's very difficult to appeal, because you don't know what juries say behind closed doors. They don't deliver a verdict with reasons the way a judge would. And so there's very little to sort of analyze about their decision. But what would be appealable would be how the judge treated the evidence. In this case, there was issues throughout the trial of national security, what could be admitted in the trial as evidence, what could be publicized. The media wasn't allowed into the trial very many days. They would get vetted transcripts. So if there was and the defense lawyer for Cameron Ortis said it was very difficult to provide a full defense given all these restrictions. Well, if that's the case and they can show that there was evidence that could have been brought in under different provisions of security that would have helped exonerate Ortis, then you could see a successful appeal on that one. So we'll keep an eye for that, I suspect. So he has to appeal within 30 days. So we'll know very quickly whether Cameron Ortis is going to appeal the verdict and the sentence. The sentence might not be terribly unreasonable if the verdict is solid. His defense lawyer is looking for just a few, time served, essentially, I think, was unrealistic. It seemed to be in a mode of they couldn't believe he was convicted, and so they were trying to make submissions on sentence on the basis of, well, he shouldn't have been convicted, which you can't do. You have to make your sentencing submissions acknowledging that the person's been convicted. So the verdict is certainly something that I think we'll see appealed, and it'll be interesting to see what the Court of Appeal is able to do with the analysis of the evidence and what can be admitted in from a national security perspective. All right, third story. This is out of the United States. A school shooting in Michigan back in 2021. Four students killed by a guy named Ethan Crumley, 15 years old at the time. He pled guilty, admitted to it, and he's in jail for life. His mother, Jennifer Crumley, was also charged. She was charged with involuntary manslaughter. All right, so what does that mean? Other parents have been charged in similar situations of with reckless conduct or neglect. First time that the parent has been charged at this level with involuntary manslaughter, basically being a party to killing. Reckless conduct, neglect, those are misdemeanor charges. What would be the equivalent of a summary conviction charge, less than 2 years maximum jail time in Canada. So what happened? In this case, the parents bought this kid a pistol. So first no-no. But there was warnings galore, text messages from the son to his mother, you know, saying that he was seeing demons in the house, that there was a meeting at the school just 2 hours prior to the shootings, and he had written on a math sheet that he saw blood everywhere. He was texting his mother that he felt he was a danger. She texted back something like LOL and don't get caught or something, you know, something very, very inappropriate. He seemed to be basically saying, I'm a danger, I can't control myself, and, you know, seeking help and seeking to have himself, I guess, made. He felt he was a danger and was trying to express that to his parents. In the meeting 2 hours prior, where he was talking to school counselors, the decision was made thereafter not to take him home by himself, because that would be, they didn't want him by himself. They kept him in school. Nobody thought to search his backpack. The gun was in his backpack, and that was the result. So what does it mean? Involuntary manslaughter. If you're a party to the incident and there is a high degree of foreseeability of harm that results in death. You don't have to foresee that somebody is going to be killed, although in this case, obviously with a pistol and a loaded pistol, that's very foreseeable. You just have to have the foreseeability of harm, and then whatever the harm is results in death. So could absolutely happen in Canada, and brings up a lot of issues, you know, of personal autonomy, parental supervision, how much is expected of parents. This case may seem sort of obvious, but I see legal commentators are already concerned that they'll become a slippery slope kind of a thing with this. Don't have the same concerns necessarily, like in a case where it's so clear and obvious, that's probably the standard, and that's going to be the standard with a high degree of foreseeability of harm. Respond to your child's text messages or talk to them, don't text them, and don't buy your troubled teen a pistol. How about that? There's some pretty clear lessons there. So probably see more of these as, you know, the parental role in all of these shootings gets analyzed more and more. All right, so last thing, just wanted to make that point anyway, that could happen. Hopefully we don't see as many school shootings, obviously, in Canada as they have in the U.S. for all kinds of reasons. But certainly the legal framework is not so different in that case that it could happen here. All right, last story I want to talk about is Lyle Howe. Lyle Howe has had a very difficult last decade, almost, I guess. He was originally charged back in 2015, and I've talked about these circumstances before. You know, he was double booked in court, different complaints from clients, complaints from judges, that he wasn't always quite forthcoming with his reasons and excuses for not being in a certain place. And there's lots of lawyers I know that are double booked and often, you know, they might miss a court date or they just, you know, things get overlooked. They do not all get charged or certainly disbarred. There were 66 days of hearings for Lyle Howe from those original charges. Important to note, Lyle Howe is a black man, and there's not that many black lawyers in Nova Scotia, and this, I thought, looked terrible on the Bar Society to be going after him so vigorously as they did. 66 days of hearings is a ton of time. They spent a ton of money on lawyers prosecuting Lyle Howe. So that's the background. He was disbarred. I mean, the committee found that, and Lyle Howe appealed that to the Court of Appeal and was not overturned. Of course, the Court of Appeal didn't look at it completely afresh. They just analyzed whether the Bar Society has the expertise to handle these things and whether it was all reasonable, and they determined that it was. All right, that's not what this was about this week. In 2016, there was a new complaint. So this was in the middle of the other hearing. And there was a new complaint, and it was made by lawyer Raymond Larkin, well-known lawyer in Halifax in Nova Scotia, labor side lawyer, works Pink Larkin, does a lot of work for the Barrister Society in their prosecutions. Barrister Society often, they have internal lawyers, but they'll often hire external counsel to do these complaints and prosecutions. Okay, so in 2016, they lay a new complaint against Lyle Howe. And in 2020, that complaint was withdrawn. Okay, so Lyle Howe filed a lawsuit against Ray Larkin, against Victoria Reese, who's the Director of Professional Responsibility at the Bar Society at the time, and the Bar Society itself, three parties, claiming defamation, claiming malicious prosecution. All right, so that was done, and there were some issues with his claim, and he tried to make some amendments to it, but Ray Larkin hired counsel. Well, I'm sure the Bar Society paid for that, hired counsel and applied for summary judgment, saying that it was out of time, that the claim was filed in 2020 and the 2 years was up. You get a 2 year window to make to file a lawsuit after you become aware of a claim, or after the claim sort of crystallizes, and Larkin said that it was beyond that two-year time frame. Justice Peter Rosinsky agreed with that, and not only dismissed the claim against Ray Larkin, but also dismissed the claim against Victoria Reese and the Bar Society. Now, what's the problem there? Well, neither the Bar Society nor Ms. Reese had made their own motion seeking to have those claims dismissed. So the Court of Appeal said, and the Court of Appeal was, the panel was Justices David Farrar, Peter Bryson, and Cindy Bourgeois. Lyle Howe, represented by his spouse, Laura McCarthy, who was up against Michael Brooker, a very experienced counsel out of Truro, does a lot of prosecution work for the Bar Society. And he had an article clerk helping him out. And then Jeffrey Breen from Cox Palmer, one of the biggest law firms in the region. So Laura McCarthy going against two heavyweights in the Court of Appeal, comes out with a big victory for her husband, Lyle Howe. So good on her. So the court says, well, the Court of Appeal said that Justice Rosinsky made a mistake, because he was saying that when the charge was laid in 2016, or certainly when Howe was disbarred in 2017, he would have been aware enough of the prosecution to know that it was, to know at least in his mind, if he felt he could prove it, that it was malicious. Whatever maliciousness, in a sense, the judge said kind of crystallized at that moment is when the prosecution is laid. Long decision from Justice Rosinsky, by the way, 131 pages with 118 footnotes for a simple motion to on summary judgment and amending pleadings. So the Court of Appeal took note of that too. Like, this, in a way, is a very simple factual situation, but because, Justice Rosinsky took it so far, it became kind of complicated through his own lengthy decision. But here was the problem. It wasn't when the complaint was made in 2016 that the time frame starts, because In order to prove malicious prosecution, you need to show that you were prosecuted, that there was some other reason other than, you know, just the normal lane of charges reasons, you know, something beyond beyond the norm was behind the reason, you know, there's something malicious about the motivation. But then also, you have to win the case in order to show, because if it was a malicious prosecution, then you got to win the case then. If you lose the case, then the courts can presume then that the prosecution itself must have been appropriate, or else you would have won, or the prosecution wouldn't have been able to prove its case. So what does that mean in this situation? Well, until the Bar Society withdrew the charge in 2020, Lyle Howell couldn't say that he won until 2020 comes along. So that is when the two-year time frame starts. Seems like a simple situation, but Justice Rosinsky got it wrong. Court of Appeal overturned it. And so now what they've said is that Lyle Howell can pursue that malicious prosecution claim against all three parties, Ray Larkin, Victoria Reese, and the Bar Society as an entity. And they also, he was trying to make some amendments. The court didn't get into exactly what those amendments were, but he said, well, you can now make those amendments or apply to make those amendments at least. They gave him a little bit of guidance to make sure the amendments relate to the malicious prosecution claim. Not some of these other things that he was also claiming, defamation and such, because he had conceded at one point that the defamation claim couldn't be made. Probably wished he hadn't done that, but anyway, he did, so you got to live with that too. So I've seen this portrayed as a big win at the Court of Appeal for Lyle Howell, which it is. He didn't prove the malicious prosecution claim. That's not what this was about. That is still to be determined whether that indeed was malicious on the part of the Bar Society. But at least now he can pursue that claim. So good for Lyle Howe and good for Laura McCarthy for pursuing the claim in that way. And so we'll see what happens if they do indeed continue with that, as I think he's inclined to do. All right, so those are the claims for this week, the cases I wanted to talk about. Last thing is that there will not be a Sunday night show tonight because of the Super Bowl. So Jordan and Paul and I will join you next week. Last thing, Super Bowl. Okay, so my prediction, San Francisco over Kansas City, 30-27. That's my prediction on the score today. So we'll be watching and enjoying the Super Bowl, some snacks, and some good times later on. So I hope everybody enjoys that. Maybe watch this. I can't remember who the halftime show is, but maybe you can be watching the Rogers Brief or encouraging others to do so during the halftime show. It would be counter-programming to whatever the musical act is. There hasn't been a great musical act since Michael Jackson in, what was that, 94, 95, anyway, during one of the Dallas Cowboys Super Bowls. So anyway, no, that's not true. There's been some good ones, but that one was the best. So all right, we'll be back next week with more legal analysis, and be back next Sunday night as well with Jordan and Paul for the Sunday night show as well. So until then, thank you everybody for watching. Thank you everybody for listening, and we'll see you next time.